Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. It's a $575 billion problem, and it's about to get a lot worse. The words data breach are becoming more and more common, and you've heard on the news that there have been countless breaches by hackers of governmental agencies, companies, and even global information firms like Experian. This has meant the loss to potential criminals of millions of personal records, including names, addresses, and in some cases, social security numbers. You would figure that with all these data breaches, companies would learn, but it's the same process over and over again. So to find out what's really happening and what we can do about it, join me with my guest, Dr. Timothy C. Summers. He is the CEO of Summers & Company, and he is at also the University of Maryland iSchool, and his website is howhackersthink.com. He's also a consultant to Fortune 500 companies, and a self-described ethical hacker, which means he's an individual employed and entrusted to penetrate an organization's own networks to uncover weaknesses using the same methods as an adversarial hacker. It's interesting stuff, so let's meet him. Hi, Dr. Summers. Welcome.
Hi, Steve. Thank you.
So cybercrime is a hot topic. We're all online. We've had all of these very visible events from hacking Target and Home Depot and even Ashley Madison. The list goes on. What kind of information are these hackers really getting?
Right. I mean, that's a great question. You know, as you said, we've seen many different breaches that are going on. And many times it's actually a lot of the same kinds of data, you know, usually includes personal information like names, addresses, social security numbers, dates of birth, and various identifiers like your driver's license number, military IDs, passport numbers, things like that. Basically anything that you use, you know, to do business with a retailer or pay your bills.
So what are they doing with this info, and what are the different ways that they make money off of this?
Right. So many times what happens is that, you know, once that data is collected, and I mean, you know, for example, we saw in this recent hack with Experian and T-Mobile, for 15 million records. So, you know, imagine you get 15 million people, basically. You have record entries for 15 million people. So then what do you decide to do with that? Well, you know, a lot of times what you may do with it is you may try to sell it. You may try to use it yourself to create, you know, some false identities or rather to, you know, perform identity theft and, and create some new lines of credit and things like that, which can also be sold then. So let's just say hypothetically, you get all this information. You then take the information, the names, addresses, social security numbers, all those sorts of things, start new credit cards or new lines of credit, and then go on the black market and maybe sell that. Or you can just sell the identities themselves to other people on the other malicious hackers on the dark web or on the black market. And, you know, you can make a pretty penny doing that.
So when you mention they're selling them on the dark web, that's kind of a new term that people are just learning.
Right.
What is the dark web?
Think of it this way. The internet that you know of, that we know of, you know, in general, you go to Google or Bing or whatever your search engine of choice is, you search for a website, and, you know, search options come up. That's the general internet, right? That's what most of us know as the internet. However, there is another part of the internet that is not accessible via those search engines and things like that. You actually have to use completely different software applications to actually even access these other sites. And they're sites that exist, but you have to use very technical and very specialized means to even get to them. And that's what we refer to as the dark web.
And these people can operate anonymously?
Sure. You know, pseudo-anonymously, we'd like to say. But essentially, yes. I mean, you can route your traffic through various other places, various other countries, and do various things, you know, highly technical things to obfuscate, you know, your identity and where you're really coming from. So people who operate on the dark web, generally, it's incredibly hard to identify who they are, and they go through painstaking detail to keep themselves anonymous.
So this is what's been bugging me. So there seems to be a pattern. A company discloses a data theft, executives express grave concern, and then customers are left to reset their passwords and sign up for free data protection. Now, companies are earning money from selling our data, so why don't these same companies do more to protect us from a data breach?
And, you know, this is a plain and simple answer here, right? I mean, there just really isn't enough, good enough reason, really, for the companies to do that. I mean, essentially, they're not willing to spend the money, the extra money for the extra security. And then there really are no real consequences, you know, if the data is breached. There just really aren't any substantial consequences there.
Well, they lose trust. People will eventually, when they wake up, lose the trust of giving their data to these companies in order to affect transactions.
Well, we'd like to think so. I mean, you know, for example, we look at the Target situation. You know, really more than anything else, what's happening, and actually, let's not even just pick on Target. Let's just say in general, really, yeah. Here. What ends up happening most of the time, right, is that, you know, you find out that your data has been breached at some company, and, well, the companies that are out there start telling you, the consumer, that you need to change things that you're doing.
Right.
You need to do this with your credit card, or you need to not do that when you're online, or you need to not do this. But they never really say, hey, you know what, we should be doing something different.
I know.
And that's the really interesting thing, right? If you think about even, you know, for example, you know, in the statement that you just made about, you know, the customer ends up signing up for these various, you know, identity protection services, that's something that the customer has to then go and do. And then, you know, try to find additional ways to keep an eye on their credit and things like that. But very rarely does the retailer or the company themselves introduce really, really, really substantial change to the way that they do things. They may add some, you know, do a one-time investment in some new technology, you know, to sort of improve their security posture. But, you know, for the most part, they're just really, there are no regulations that are out there that, you know, force them to improve their security.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you that question, because what about the Federal Trade Commission? Don't they get involved, and don't they have any power to force companies to do more?
Right. So they can do an investigation if the breach is large enough. If the breach is large enough and impacts enough people and enough systems, they can then do an investigation and strongly encourage that the company do something about it. But to this date, there really is no regulation that has been put in place, you know, bang the gavel on the table, this is what we're doing. There have been a few that have been proposed, but, you know, like many other things in our current politics, just, you know, can't get any total buy-in on it.
Well, to hear this interview again, don't forget to join the conversation at onthemoneyradio.org. My guest is Dr. Timothy C. Summers. He's the CEO of Summers and Company. You can find out more at his website at www.howhackersthink.com. And to follow his research further, you can go to the University of Maryland iSchool website and see more about that. So, Dr. Summers, on a more personal level, what should consumers truly be concerned about?
Well, definitely consumers should reconsider signing up for loyalty programs at retailers. You know, they should try to stay as anonymous as they can by protecting their own information. You know, using prepaid credit cards helps. You know, using services like, for example, Google Voice, which will give you a central number to forward to the rest of your numbers so that you don't give out your real phone number, that helps.
Well, hold on. Before you go on, let's back up, because these are major changes to the way most of us do business.
Sure, sure.
When you say signing up for a retail membership, were you talking about like an awards program?
Yeah, because, you know, you have to think about it. That's really how most of your information is getting into the databases, right? You sign up for some loyalty program, and now your information, or maybe even a specialty card, you know, you sign up for the Macy's credit card.
Mm-hmm.
It's things like that that put your information into the hands of the retailer or the company in the first place. And so it's just, you know, until there is a hard and fast, you know, regulation in place, or until companies really begin to take their security, their data security seriously, you know, the onus really ends up being on the consumer to, you know, take the measures to protect their own information.
So when you say try to use cash and prepaid credit cards, you're, in a sense, you're saying get offline in this way.
In a way, I mean, it depends on really how, you know, in security, we have this statement that we make, it depends on how much pain, you know, you're really willing to take, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you're really concerned about your data being stolen and you really don't feel like consumers are doing enough as far as you're concerned, then, you know, these are some steps that you can take to, you know, to try to continue using your retailers that you prefer but not feeling so left out in the cold or vulnerable, you know, if a breach happens.
Yeah, well, I want my double points, though, you know, when I
can't. If you want your double points, you're taking the risk.
I guess that's I have to decide if it's a fair trade-off.
Right.
So you also mentioned using a phone management service like Google Voice. Now, I have received calls from people who use Google Voice, and quite frankly, it's not so great. It's kind of awkward, and, you know, you get the transcription,
right,
you know, in your text or something, and you're going like, who is this, and what are they trying to actually tell me? But by doing that, you're getting, what, further steps removed from these hackers?
A little bit, yeah. You're putting another layer there, right? Because if someone were to try to do a traceback on that number, for example,
they couldn't. Yeah.
They wouldn't find you. Mm-hmm. They'd find Google.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I hope any telemarketer is not listening to this broadcast. This is not for you.
Right.
You also mentioned signing up for a post office box instead of you using your home address. I mean, this sounds like, you know, getting a hut in Montana or something, you know, and stocking it full of food. It seems very extreme, really. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, consider this, right? You know, when you're, you know, for example, with the Experian and T-Mobile data, right? They've got your name, they've got your address,
yeah,
they've got your social,
yeah,
you know, all of that stuff that goes into those credit, you know, those credit bureau servers. And, you know, the interesting thing is now they've gotten your entire identity. I mean, pretty much everything that is representative of you,
yeah,
is there.
Yeah.
So as much as you can do to sort of, you know, obfuscate or add another layer of protection there,
yeah,
that helps you out in the long run. So it really just depends. And you don't have to do all of these things. These are just some things that you mm-hmm. could do mm-hmm. to help out.
All right. So you're in the business. You're working within these organizations. You see the bad stuff and you see the counter forces fighting the bad stuff. Do you do any of these things?
Yes, I do, actually. Many of the things that I recommend to consumers or my clients, you know, I also do them myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, you do the best you can. And really, you know, another thing we say in security is that there's no such thing as, you know, a system not being hackable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but you try to be as secure as possible, right?
Yeah.
And so these are just some measures that, you know, that you try to take to limit your exposure.
So here's another couple. One that I know that we use here in our business, and we work with major custodians, we're investment advisors, and that is this two-factor authentication. What is that? Explain.
Right. So in terms of, you know, personal authentication, we like to say that there's something you have, something you are, and something you know. Your password is something you know. A token of some sort is something you have. And, you know, and biometrics are something you are. And by biometrics, I mean your fingerprint and iris scan,
mm-hmm.
things like that, things that are part of you. Two-factor authentication means that you utilize two of those three things to authenticate to a system. So perhaps you use your password and a number that's produced by a little token that you have or by your mm-hmm. smartphone.
A random number generator.
Right, a number generator of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Now, what we do, and I've seen this now more and more on sites, is that the site will text me a code.
Yes.
And I like that because nobody else is getting that text, hopefully. And therefore, it's sending it directly to my email. Hopefully, nobody's watching. But, you know, at least I have a number that is uniquely mine for that very short period of time.
Yes. And the beauty of that kind of system is that the number is only valid for a short period of time.
Yeah.
Because there is a way to intercept your text and intercept your email.
Mm-hmm.
However, the hacker would have to be doing it at precisely the right time.
Mm-hmm. I know, and generally it's like 30 seconds or something
right. Very
short.
Right, and then they have to send you a new one.
You also right. You also mentioned if you use a debit card to make a purchase, select credit, not debit. Why is that?
Yeah, because, you know, using your debit card requires you to enter your PIN, and that can make you pretty vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
It could be as simple as someone shoulder surfing. And by shoulder surfing, I mean, you know, maybe they're peering over your shoulder without you noticing while you're putting in your PIN.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's a lot of, you know, really tech-savvy criminals out there now that have devices that we call skimmers that can essentially be the slot where you slide your card in. They put an attachment over it, and it looks like it's a part of the machine.
Yeah.
You slide your card in, and they're basically grabbing the magnetic data. I've even seen where, you know, some criminals have even put up a hidden camera near the pad so that they can see what numbers you're putting in. And, you know, we have to keep in mind that you know, the reason that there's that debit option is because it's cheaper for the retailer.
Uh-huh.
But it is definitely the least secure of those two options.
Now, I'm not too familiar with this, but Apple has an iBeam feature on their phone.
A beacon, rather.
What is that?
Yeah, so beacon is a technology that really hasn't been used. We're not quite using it the way that everyone intends it to be used quite yet. But what it will be used for is, you know, in the near future, and when I say near future, I mean probably over the next, you know, year or two, you will literally be able to walk into a store and, you know, you're using, let's say right now you're using Apple Pay. So this is rolling out, of course, in phases. You use Apple Pay to buy something. Well, those records, what you bought, is in a system somewhere. Well, let's say you walk into a store and there's a beacon on a shelf of yellow shirts. And your phone beacons out to that beacon with the yellow shirts and says, hey, you know, last week, you know, Tim bought some jeans that would go great with this yellow shirt. So then you get a notification on your phone saying, hey, there's some yellow shirts on the left side of the store that will go great with those jeans that you bought last week. So beacon technology is what would enable something like that.
Yeah, it's very futuristic. I think I saw a movie with Tom Cruise.
Minority Report.
Minority Report, exactly. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. My guest is Timothy C. Summers. He is the CEO of Summers & Company. The website is howhackersthink.com. And to access more of his research, go to the University of Maryland iSchool. Dr. Summers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.